Welcome into another episode of That's
So Cincinnati.
Silent Phil on the ones and twos. Right out of the gate, he hits it. Jason Williams, Sherry Coolidge. Exciting episode today.
The tables episode.
The great American. Bill Cunningham with us today. Our special guest. I'm so excited about this.
I'm excited too, but that was a terrible impression. Especially because he was just on the podcast giving a New Year's resolution for us and did the Great American and it only he can do. So
yes, I know. My Marty's bad too. My Marty, my Bill Cunningham. All right.
Kudos for trying, I guess.
I say it in reverence to both of them. My bad impersonations are in reverence to both of them because I very much am a big fan of both. So
I feel like, you know, he has had such, there's no one else like him, not even Jason and myself, like with these big interviews, news making for like 38 years now, I think. He's coming up on the big 4-0, and I think he has a lot to tell us about, you know, our political landscape.
We're going to talk about Trump. We're going to talk about his career, when he's maybe going to hang it up. Talk about local issues and the presidential race and we want to ask him about his story too, about how he got, it's a great story, how he got into radio.
Yep.
The accidental radio host is and now here he is 38 years later. But first, before we get to Willie.
Speaking of politics.
Before we get to 700 WLW, News Radio 700 WLW's Bill Cunningham. Let's talk a little local politics, which is what Willie loves to talk about as well. The mayor's race just got a little wrench thrown into it. The 2021 mayor's race here in Cincinnati.
Basically, after we recorded this episode last week, the mayor's race got a shakeup, like just huge news, like right after we walked out of here.
Yeah. Yeah, you and I were sitting in a meeting with someone, and that news broke, and you stayed in the meeting and wrote the story right there on the spot. Journalism in the 21st century.
True story. You don't even need to be connected to anything.
So anyway, just to catch everyone up, Vice Mayor Christopher Smitherman decided last week to drop out of the 2021 mayor's race, leaving P.G. Sittenfeld as the only candidate currently. Again, P.G., just to be clear, hasn't officially declared for that race, but it's an open secret that he is going to run for mayor in 2021. Smitherman cited the needing to spend time with his five children a year later after his wife lost her battle with cancer, and certainly just a tough time for him.
It was a heart-wrenching statement.
He really
posted
was.
It on Twitter. It's kind of how he decided to announce this on the anniversary of his wife's death. And he just talked about having to take care of his family. And he did say, you know, later I talked to him. And the thing I think that resonated with me the most is he said, sometimes you can't have it all. And like, I think in today's world with type A personalities, especially like coming out of City Hall and our politicians, right? You think you can have it all. And he just said he needs to be with his family right now. And there's just an outpouring of love for him.
Yep.
With this. But he did say, what did he say? He called it a pause. So he left the door open. This is definitely not the end. It's just the moment.
You think it's a pause for the mayor's race or a pause for his political career?
Pause for his political career. Yeah. He was very clear
Absolutely.
About that.
Absolutely. I think he still has a very bright political future. I think this is a good move, as I've said in columns, and you and I talked about when I hosted on WLW over the weekend about that politically this was – it's so tough for a non-Democrat to win the mayor's race head-to-head in the city of Cincinnati.
He's an independent, you know, skews, you know, very popular among Republicans, skews that way.
Yeah, tough road for someone – of those political leanings, and I think this was a good move for him, and I think this gives him a chance to take a step back, spend time with his family, focus on being the vice mayor, and then maybe, you know, here in the next several months or a year, he starts to really zero in on running for Hamilton County Commissioner in 2022, that midterm year against Stephanie Dumas, and there's a lot of people who want him to run this year against Denise Driehaus. 22 is a much easier, or I don't, easier is not the right word, but is a much clearer path for him. Stephanie Dumas is not very popular among either political party, and I see Christopher Smitherman with a great shot at getting that seat. What say you?
No, I agree with that. I mean, even politics aside, the idea of the city is really looking for someone to, the city is the largest government entity in the county, 300 people of the 800, 300,000 of the 800,000. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, like from a city perspective, feel like the commission is, you know, short shrifting the city on things. It's like when it comes to like sewer rates and the projects, and they feel like the banks, you know, who's going to make decisions down at our riverfront. And I think that there's also, politics aside, a groundswell for the idea of somebody coming up from a city point of view onto the commission.
I'll tell you what, it'll be really interesting if this commission here in, 2 years looks like, well, it not looks like, but it has, if Alicia Reese wins the seat for Todd Portune's seat this year, then you have Denise Driehaus, who's going to get reelected. And then if Smitherman gets reelected, you go from, you know, this battle of city county thing to now having really two former prominent city politicians now on the commission. All three of those commissioners who, all three of those people I just mentioned who could be on the commission are, do live in the city. Denise Driehaus lives in Clifton. But you would, it'd be interesting to see, does that help city county relations? Does it shift the commission to being uber city focused? You know, what's your thought on that? And I know this is, we're just projecting a little bit here, but it is certainly a strong possibility.
Well, I mean, definitely Alicia Reese will bring that perspective ahead of a 2022 race coming, because she, you know, understands the very real issues of the city as she helped guide it through a tough time on a council that's been widely praised for the hard work that it did, you know, after the civil unrest and the riots of 2001.
Alicia Reese played a really key role in that, too, when organizations were boycotting bringing their conventions here. Alicia Reese was leading the way and helping to mend those fences and bring conventions back to Cincinnati. And it really actually helped catapult her into a role in the state tourism department when she had left City Hall and before she went on to the, or was elected to the State House. She worked for the state tourism department or bureau. I don't know what's officially called, but.
So, I mean, I will say that Christopher Smitherman's announcement, as much as we're supposed to be talking about the sheriff's, the county primaries, you know, 56 days from recording time right now.
Sure.
It really, you know, has thrown like the guessing game about the mayor's race, you know, into full throttle. Yes. Because it seems like, well, that's good news for P.G. Sittenfeld. You know, like a very strong competitor dropped out of the race, but it has left open a big wide hole. And the unknown is scarier than your known competitor.
That's exactly right. And looking at some of the kind of the chatter over the weekend on social media, there were some folks that said this is a real opportunity for a reform candidate to come in and really try to clean up City Hall. Right now, I don't see that person. I don't know who that could be. I'm really at a loss for who.
I heard a rumor this morning.
Oh, this is a good place for those to be discussed.
Okay, so like the kind of rumor that is like, see, I heard it as a rumor that somebody kind of knows, but the idea, too, that this could be a very real possibility. Cecil Thomas.
Interesting.
Term limited out as a state senator in 2022. This would be a really, I think, a step in his career where he has maybe always, like, headed in the past. You know, he's a police officer, really helped integrate the department at a time when it wasn't, kind of came up through that path. He's been a real voice for the community, and I could see him running for mayor.
That's interesting. I had him on my, when I did, we talked with Chuck Mingo last week, and I did that kind of 10 people who I think would be good mayors. I remember I'd have to go back and look at it, but I'm pretty sure I put Cecil Thomas on that.
Your crystal ball.
Yeah. It's got a lot of cracks in it. It's pretty much broken.
But I do feel like
that would be interesting.
I mean, I think there's going to be a very serious, of course, black candidate. And it just leaves it open. It could be more of a field race than it probably was going to be.
Yeah, and I've said Alicia Reese, I think, would be a really strong candidate if she doesn't win this commission seat against Connie Pillich.
Which Yvette Simpson.
I flip that commission seat. Just flip a coin. I have no clue who's going to win that, and no one else does either. To anyone you ask, they'll say, "I have no idea." So, but anyway, if Alicia Reese does lose that, I think to me she's a really strong, formidable candidate. Let's not underestimate P.G. Sittenfeld. The guy is a real juggernaut on the campaign. He's raised already a ton of money. We're gonna see how much more he's raised here coming up in a few weeks when the campaign finance reports come out.
Also extremely popular.
Very popular.
You know, kind of out and about, and a known person of, like, especially among, I think, young people. He is out there, and they recognize him and like him, and I feel like he can connect with a younger audience. I don't know if the mayor's race is that younger audience yet. We'll see. But he definitely has that going for him.
I'll tell you what, if anyone thinks he's going to just sort of thinks he's cruising to victory, that's not him. I could see him. I've already have talked to some folks around him who said, like, you know, he'll double down and work even harder than what he's doing. And there are a few people who are harder workers on campaigns around here than he is.
You know where I need to see the hard work?
Where?
City council. It's basically, if we had 2-year terms, as we did in the past and are going to again, we'd be starting that second term. 2 years is plenty of time to get things done.
Yep.
So that's where all the hard work needs to come out. On council for him, for all of them. And we'll be watching, right?
Absolutely. It's crazy to think that we're sitting here talking about 2021 when 2020 is just really revving up and crazy primaries coming up and obviously a crazy general election, national, local, state, everything. There's so many intense races. But you will be all over that at Sharon Coolidge on Twitter. And just go on cincinnati.com and search for Sharon Coolidge, and she'll have all the latest on City Hall. Anything else we need to discuss before we jump to Willie?
Oh, no, he's here, so let's do it.
Let's do it. Let's jump over and bring on the one and only Bill Cunningham. All right, special guest time here on That's So Cincinnati. Love to welcome in
the great American.
William Cunningham. Bill, how you doing?
Jason, Sherry, I'm doing well. Keeping a low profile as always.
Well, we know that's not
true. As always. I was a little speechless there, you sitting here in the flesh.
This is it.
I hear you so much.
Let's talk about Martin Luther King Jr.
I've heard you my entire life, and now here I am seeing you face to face.
You're from Eastern. You're out from
Southeast Ohio, yeah.
That's good. The home of Joe Burrow, who may not be a Bengal, I understand now.
What?
According to the Bengals, they made an announcement today. Tobin said that whoever said that he's going to be the number one pick, we're not focused on that. We're going to evaluate things. If they got to evaluate this, they're in worse trouble than I thought.
I was trying to stay away from Joe Burrow as I hosted as I sat in your seat on over the weekend a couple times on WLW. People want to talk about Joe Burrow, and I was trying to avoid it. So,
now what do you do?
I leave that.
You have to give the audience what they want.
Leave
which
it to Ken
thank
Brew.
You, honestly, thank you for coming in. You know, we listen to you at our desks in the afternoon so many times. You break news. You have our elected officials on, and you're ahead of the curve, and we're just, you know. You never know what's going to happen when your show's going on.
In the morning,
on.
What I did this morning, I spoke to two county officials. I spoke to a congressman in Northern Kentucky. I spoke to Alex T. And I kind of see what's going on. And they know they can tell me, say things to me that I'm not going to repeat until it happens. And they trust me, as does the mayor and a couple county commissioners. But I'm sideways with one or two of them. I like to think I know what's going on. I know where the bodies are buried.
I know the feeling.
Yeah.
You're the best political reporter in town, I think. I mean, you are so plugged in, and you've built these sources over time. Was that always when you first got into this? Was it just something that you built over time? Did you even think that you would?
No.
Build
the first
sources?
4 or 5 years in radio, the rules were: do not talk about politics verbatim. Don't do that, and don't talk about sex, and don't talk about religion. So the first 4 or 5 years in talk radio, I did had urologists on, I had gynecologists on, I had car repair guys on, I had psychics on, I did legal advice, medical advice, chiropractic advice. And the rule was, you can't talk about that. People don't want to hear about politics on talk radio. And then 87, 88, Reagan got rid of the equal time rule, which means that you didn't have to put somebody on necessarily. And so that changed it completely. And so for many years, it was the commandos of talk radio. I did some TV shows with Geraldo when he was on, talking about how you have to break through the clutter and be like a goofball yelling, screaming, and be on the edge. We went through that cycle for 7 or 8 years.
The shtick.
It was.
Yeah.
And then after 01, 9/11, things got real serious. It was like, holy God, America's under attack. It's like Pearl Harbor stuff. So then we got national security. I went to the Pentagon, Donald Rumsfeld, Bush in the White House, 43, and it became very political. And then it divided between liberal and conservative. And there was a large liberal base of talk radio that evaporated.
Yes, it did.
Because
did not last long.
And they're entertaining guys. Hartman and Springer, he came back home and tried to do talk radio. It didn't work.
The moderates and conservatives own talk radio and have owned it for a long time.
Yeah, and the reason is that the mainstream media are almost all 90% plus liberal. And so if someone holds different viewpoints, you want to have them either expressed or confirmed. And if you're a liberal, you have many places to go to get liberal viewpoints confirmed or developed. ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, MSNBC, almost every newspaper, Hollywood, movies. You get that. You're inundated. You're flooded with it. And so if you're a conservative, which most Americans are, you gravitate toward those who either express or confirm your opinion. And that's where the business is today.
Let's back up and talk about when you first got in. Was that 80?
83. Okay, July of 83.
Not the path you thought you were taking with your career?
I'm accidental. Alan Browning was a living legend at KRC. I mean, KRC was the dominant. Had Rich King, had Jerry Thomas, talented guys. And new guy who left, Bobby Lawrence and Randy Michaels, left 55 KRC, and they bought 700 WLW. And so they got a hold of me and said, we want to get Alan Browning, who's the evening talk show host, to come here to 700.
And you were friends with him.
I was his lawyer.
Lawyer.
And so we spent several weeks working on the deal. You know, he was going to get this, going to get that, the salary, how long, how you can be fired, some other stuff. And we worked out the deal, and it was done. And I walked into 3 East 4th Street with Randy and some others, and I was the young lawyer back in the back there. Oh, by the way, Bob Trumpy, here's Bill Cunningham. What's your name, Bill Cunningham? I see. Gary Burbank, Bill Gable, Andy Mack was there. And Alan Browning was introduced as the evening talk show host on a Friday, and it was in the Enquirer. It was in the Post. Might have been in the Time Star. Remember that?
I don't know if it was the Time Star gone by then.
Maybe. I know it was the Post. It was a big announcement made. Browning leaves KRC for LW. So I said, okay, good. About 8:15 Monday night, I get a call from Randy. I'm living at 7281 Jeffrey in Madeira. And I'm the lawyer. And he says, he's cursing at me. And I said, what is it? He said, your client is not on the air at 700 WLW. He's still at 55 KRC. And I said, what? He said, what's going on? You playing me? And I said, I don't know what you're talking about. So on the break, I called Alan Browning about 8:30. I said, Alan, you're supposed to be on the air at 9 o'clock at 3 East 4th Street, and you're up the hill. What are you going to do? He said, I changed my mind this afternoon. They offered me a lot more money, and I'm staying at 55 KRC. I said, you got to be kidding me, man. You did what? And I told him along the process, let's play tennis. They offer this, you offer that. Let's get a little.
Negotiations.
I don't want to do that.
Tennis or golf?
Yeah, I don't want to do it because I want to be at a bigger signal. It covers 7 states in the day and the night. And I said, okay. So we didn't play tennis. So I called Randy back. He said, in that case, you get down there at 9:05. You do the talk show. And I said, me do the talk show.
That is problem solving at its best.
It was like 8:40 and I'm in Madeira. I get in my car and I drive to 3 East 4th Street, get there at 9 o'clock. I'm on there at 9:05. I call my wife, Penny. I call my buddies, Mark Mankey. I called Brad Frank. I said, you got to call in, man. I don't know what I'm doing.
So you had 3 hours.
3 hours. No, really, it was 4. I was on from 9 p.m. to 1 a.m. For like 2 years. And so I was failing, I think, miserably. And in like March or April, Sako Wethe, legendary Sako, gets a hold of me and says, you know, I'm a Democrat. I want you to run against Robert Kraft for judge, 1984. And I said, well, I always wanted to be a judge because I'd been a law, federal law clerk. I'd been a bailiff, et cetera. So I go in to see Randy. I said, Randy, it's been about 6 months. I said, do I have a future in radio? He says, you really don't.
One of the greats of the radio. Like a godfather of
It's Randy. Right? He said, you really don't have
it. Okay.
I said, I appreciate the honesty. So I call Sako back and he said, look, do about another week or 10 days. I got this woman in GN in Chicago is going to come and do it. I forgot her name. And so she didn't show up. The home state crisis happened. I had done work for Franklin Savings and Loan, which was an ODGF. I understood OGF. I kind of knew Burton Barngard and Marvin Warner and that crew. And so I organized these rallies to make sure these depositors were paid at the Schmidt Fieldhouse at Xavier. And all of a sudden, and then the Challenger blew up, unfortunately, suddenly my career took off. And suddenly I was understanding what I was talking about, and I was allowed to develop my routine on radio. And the rest is history.
When did the Great American thing start?
You know, it was like 20 years ago. It was when I was in the Pentagon and Rumsfeld invited a few of us up for the quadrangle, the, whatever it is in the middle. There's a park in the middle of the Pentagon. And boy, it was dramatic. And I just, you know, and I think I'm patriotic, but I really believe that stuff anyway. And so it just started. And it might have been him or Andy Card or somebody said, you sound like a great American. And I just started doing it.
You've interviewed every president that's been in office since you've been in radio?
Obama. I tried for Obama. That didn't work. And if I had Obama on, I disagree with his policies. I'm always respectful to if a guest is on my show, I'm not going to attack them and make a fool. Because I want them to be feel comfortable and come back.
Totally.
But I've had them on except for Obama.
And yeah, Clinton, Reagan,
and of course, Bush 41 secretaries. And they kind of use us, but they're a great guest. And Trump is wonderful. Trump's the greatest ever as far as radio. And what I see, you know, I have him on my screensaver right there.
That was from the rally just this past Heritage. Summer in July.
And he'll call me now and then and ask questions about what's happening, what am I doing wrong. I'm one of several that he calls. I know he calls others. And I give him my perspective in the Midwest. I think what he's doing right, what he's doing wrong. He doesn't accept criticism at all. If you say I suggest this or that, I'm not.
So are you telling us the presidents in your phone?
Yeah.
Does he come up as like the president or is it Donald Trump?
If he calls, the first time he called me, I was on Stephanopoulos in the morning about a year and a half, 2 years ago. And I defended him, of course, against this liberal onslaught. And I'm watching 60 Minutes with my wife. We're sitting on a couch and the phone rings, says Washington, D.C. And I'm going, I thought it was a telemarketer. I pick it up. Is this Bill Cunningham? Yes, the president is calling. And I said, the president of what? He said, the United States. I said, you're kidding. I had him on a couple times years ago when he wrote the book, Art of the Deal, and you know his first business deal was by the Gardens. And so we kind of knew each other a little bit, but not really. And then we talked for about 20 minutes. And he said, you mind if I call you back now and then? I said, it'd be great. So every now and then we'll talk. And he got a hold of me here, and he said, can I meet with you? So when I met with him, we went off to the side. Stephanie was there, and Pence and Karen was there, and two or three others. And we had a frank discussion, and then he called me about 2 months later, and I gave him my opinion.
Does he ask you for media advice or just general voter? Like, what's the voting land? What's the landscape there?
He asked about issues in Ohio,
and
I'm not going to get specifics, but that's he wants to know how what he's doing is playing in Ohio. And I give him my opinion. And he likes it because I'm critical at times. You know, I said, look, Mr. President, he said, call me Donald. I said, Mr. President, I'm sure a lot of people suck up to you. They all do. But I want you to be frank, and I'm honest with him. And we talk. And we were supposed to play golf when he had that government shutdown last December, and that didn't work out. But at some point, we're going to get together. But I like him dearly, and he's – I didn't support him in the beginning. As my friends know, I was a Ted Cruz kind of a guy. And I said, this guy is not going to be a conservative. He's going to play us, and he's going to get in like Bush 41 and to an extent Bush 43, and he's not going to be a conservative. And damn it, he is.
Yep.
his personality rubs a lot of people the wrong way, but his policies work. Obama's got a perfect presidential personality. He can sing and dance and cry on command, and the ladies love him. With Trump, his personality is accepting to many, disgusting to many, but his policies work for the country. And that's why
he gets reelected.
Jason has columnized many times on this.
Well, you've said this many times on the radio that he gets reelected.
I'd be shocked. Unless one of three things. Number one, if he launches some unrequired war, like the Republicans, half of them, and most of the Democrats wanted him to attack Iran after they did what they did to Saudi Arabia.
Which is a possibility.
Which is possible. They keep pushing him. And then the other thing would be if we're in some sort of recession.
Yep.
And the third thing is if they find something through all these multitude of myriad of obstructions the Congress does to find something that is so abhorrent that he loses his base.
I don't think number three is going to happen.
It could happen. It's possible, but unlikely.
Do you feel like you're going to be talking a lot about that on your show, or are you really just try and stick to the local stuff and not this whole impeachment thing that's going to be playing out over the next couple of weeks?
Well, politics is local. I mean, the reason I succeed against Rush Limbaugh, and hardly there's no one else in the country 12 to 3 that succeed against him. He's the king. And the reason is they try to be Rush Limbaugh, and they try to talk national politics. Most of my time is spent on issues and local issues. Every now and then I'll get a national guest. But I want to be like local radio, and I can have better ratings than Rush because I want to talk about what's happening with Matt Bevin. I want to talk about city council. I want to talk about Jim Neal against McGuffey. I want to talk about Mike DeWine and whether or not his policies on red flag or pink flag laws are going to work. And so that's why the Enquirer does better than USA Today. And that's why Bill Cunningham on local issues can succeed. But it's hard to have that presence and personality in this world to go 12 to 3 and to beat Rush because you have to deal with local.
Do you look at the ratings or at this point
Not
you're
really.
Like,
I
I'm just myself?
And I don't because they matter. Ratings and revenues. That's why if I didn't have ratings, I wouldn't have revenues. If I didn't have revenues, I wouldn't be on the air. So, yes, I care and I work with advertisers. I go on sales calls all the time. I guess you can't, TV can't, but Joseph Chevrolet or Queen City or Western and Southern or McKinley Mortgage or Sereno's, I go on sales calls.
Tempstar,
quality you can feel. I go on sales calls. Most in the media can't do it, but it developed in our way that we can. And so if I didn't have people paying keep me on the air, I wouldn't be there. And if I didn't have listeners with success, listeners listen, then they go and use the products. You know, it's one feeds the other.
When did you switch over and become a Republican?
It was probably 84, 85.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I voted for Jimmy Carter in 1976, and I probably voted for Nixon in 72. Ever since then, the big issue with me is abortion. A big issue with me is the southern border. A big issue with me is government spending and taxes and quality of schools. Big issue with me is less government, more individual freedom. You know, those are the big issues for me, and so. You know, there's a major realignment happening as we speak. It started about 2 years ago. In 1866, there was a realignment. There was one in 1900. There was one in 1932. There was one in 1964. There was one in 1980, 84. And now this is another wave of the realignment of politics locally and in the country. And I'm watching it. And we're kind of on the other side of the realignment. We think about Democratic Party nationally. You have the so-called moderates going after the extreme left wing, which is Bernie Sanders. Hillary Clinton cannot stand Bernie Sanders. And Barack Hussein Obama says, we can't win with those guys. I don't think Obama's policies would not win today in the Democratic primary. And with the Republicans, it used to be the elitists. It used to be the country club types. Now it's the working stiffs.
Yep.
And so as a consequence, I'm watching this realignment going on, and I kind of fit the alignment. I kind of am born in Covington. Mom was a waitress, you know, Deer Park, basketball, got me to college and all that. And so I kind of understand Deer Park, but I can walk and talk to John Barrett or play golf at Kenwood Country Club as well. I can go in the Norwood and see those folks. And so because I was the guy that organized benefits when the workers in Norwood lost their jobs and they were reassigned after the Camaro plant left. I put together a big basketball tournament at Cincinnati Gardens with Pete Rose and Chris Cosgrove with all that crew. We got the Coors All-Star softball team. So they kind of, you know, I kind of feed into that way of thinking.
Who gets through the, who's the nominee for the Democrats?
Well, it's going to be Joe Biden. And then he's going to have to pick probably Kamala Harris or Stacey Abrams or Andrew Gillum of Florida. He has to pick a person of color, and he's got to pick a left winger. I think Joe Biden has lost his fastball. I mean, he's down to about 76 miles an hour. And
yeah, he was not good last week's debate.
And anybody who's been affected by dementia or whatever it might be is very understanding of that. My father-in-law, I have family members, and so I get that. But they're in a pickle. Right now, Obama in his prime would easily have beaten Trump. Bill Clinton, circa 1992 or 96, easily would have beaten Trump. But that group ain't going to beat him. I mean, you can't beat somebody with nobody. They got nobody. Unless somebody, the only hope is Michelle Obama. But I don't see that happening because the left wingers would go nuts.
Do you think that as the left wing, the whatever you could, the
socialists, they call themselves socialists. Yes, I will.
Do you think as that uprising has happened that your show has gotten more popular?
Yeah, it's the rebound. Yeah. Now, it's the reaction. You know, every action is an opposite and equal reaction.
Yeah.
And if those who say, who love this country, that we have to get rid of private medical insurance, we have to put every hospital and doctor underneath the government umbrella, that the whole economic system is collapsing from their viewpoint, that we have to have guaranteed $1,000 a month whether you earned it or not, there's going to be a reaction of those who have achieved and worked and said, wait a minute, I want to keep my own money. I don't want to give it to people from Guadalajara. I want to keep it right here in Norwood or Hamilton County or Kenton County. And so, yes, if that didn't happen, Trump would not exist. And the reason Trump's going to win maybe 350 electoral votes is because of the nominee. And when the media focuses on the nominee's not going to do well against. Can you see Trump and Biden in some debate for several hours?
I think Trump destroys him.
Destroys him. Absolutely.
I really do.
And Bernie Sanders, give him credit. He actually believes the stuff he says. Now, I think Elizabeth Warren believes those things, but she can't say them. So she calls herself a Democrat, not a socialist.
Would be.
But go ahead. Essentially, they're the same way.
Didn't Boehner said something about, he's like, Bernie really believes that crap.
I give him credit for that because he's not a subterfuge. I'm a socialist. I partied in the USSR. I love Castro and Chavez and Venezuela. That's where we got to go. Well, go get them.
That's scary.
Go convince people of that.
All right. So tell me, either current or in the past, who has been your favorite local guest?
Local guest, Charlie Lucan.
Well, Jason, relatable. Jason and I, we always enjoy a good conversation with Charlie.
Charlie Lucan is the best. And is there a place for in the modern Democrat Party in Hamilton County? Dusty Rhodes, Jim Neal, Charlie Lucan, Denise Driehaus.
John Cranley,
who just beat Yvette Simpson. I have a sense the Democratic Party has not gone socialist yet in Hamilton County. And I have a sense
that
Cranley beat Yvette Simpson fairly handily because she wanted to shake down Children's Hospital even more. And the average person said, we can't have that. I have a sense Jim Neal is going to beat Charmaine McGuffey. I have a sense. But if that doesn't happen, there's a Bruce Hoffbauer sitting out there whose dad worked in the sheriff's department. He's a cop's cop that's going to run a campaign that's saying there's not a Republican way to enforce the law and a Democratic way to enforce the law. The law is the law, and I will enforce it, and I will protect victims.
Objectively, I think he's the best candidate in this whole race.
Bruce Hoffbauer's got great credit. But Jim Neal's done nothing wrong. I mean, if somebody would say, you know, and, you know, Sherry and I had this discussion off the air that the sheriff is not a policymaker. He simply enforces the law under a federal court order, under the lawsuits that are filed against him and the dictates of the statutes. And so,
be careful what you wish for.
Yeah.
And my thoughts after that endorsement on Saturday.
Yeah.
Is it Because this could really backfire on the local Democratic Party.
They're making a they should have stuck with the girl they took to the party. And Jim Neal in 2012 wasn't supposed to win. You might recall.
That's
my
right.
friend Sean Donovan.
Yes.
Who ran a horrible campaign.
Well, he had a lot of money.
He did.
But he
didn't spend it wisely.
You have to have money and the right message. You know, we're hearing that a lot with the Connie Pillich, Alicia Reese race, and where the people are talking about Connie Pillich has a lot of money and money matters, but the message matters because you have to have something. The money has to go somewhere.
I don't know what the issue. What's the issue that cuts between those two? And other than race, other than that, one's a veteran, one has state house experience, the other has been a city council. I like Steve Reese. I've been to his place a lot, Integrity Hall. I knew Alicia as a little girl. She went away to school. I like Alicia Reese, and I like Denise. I don't know Connie Pillich. In fact, she's so out of touch, she knocked on my door.
You don't live too far from her, right? She's in Montgomery, and you're
I'm in Kenwood, and she knocked on my door like 2 or 3 years ago. She was running for something.
Treasurer, maybe?
Maybe. She didn't know who I was. She knocked on my door.
Did you speak out loud?
I said, she knocked on my door, I want to give you something. And I looked at her, she looked at me, she handed me some literature, and I said, thank you. And I shut the door. That was it. And I thought, she's not going to win. And so I don't know who wins that, but does it make a difference? And I'm thinking, well, right now we have a county commission that has the potential of being completely dysfunctional. You can have Stephanie Dumas is chief of staff, charging Denise Driehaus and Todd Portune with harassment and assault and
to
battery.
To be fair, there's a new chief of staff there.
Yes.
Bobby Hilton. I'm sure he's been a guest on your show in the past.
Many times. And yep. Bobby Hilton, how in the hell is he qualified for that position? But secondly, is he working? Thirdly, I thought he was a full-time minister. And fourthly, didn't he say to burn down the city or something like that? And advocating a boycott against the county who now pays him? Am I missing something? Has Bobby Hilton said, look, I'm sorry for saying let's burn this town down. I'm sorry for organizing a boycott against my employer. Isn't he paid by sales tax dollars? Yes?
Partly, of course.
Taxpayer money, yeah.
Taxpayer money. And he's
county
the guy
taxpayer.
Organizing a boycott against the city and the county on the Tracy Hunter matter when Tracy Hunter's own attorney, Clyde Bennett, sat right there in my studio a couple times and said she received a fair trial. Now, I disagree with the outcome. I would think Doug Evans disagrees with the outcome, but you receive a fair trial.
That's right.
You have an opportunity at justice. You don't have complete justice. So when her lawyer says she received a fair trial, I put on my case, and I don't agree with the verdict. But don't take from the county your salary when you're organizing a boycott against it, threatening harm against the residents back to 2001. And someone should ask Bishop Hilton, are you now giving up your boycott of the county since they're paying you?
I feel like this is very new news, like on the tail end of last week, where this happened as a huge surprise to everybody. So I feel like some of those questions are pretty valid and need to be answered.
I like to know.
Going forward.
Does Stephanie Dumas, does she support the idea that Dr. Paul Sohi sued, and I guess lost, Todd Portune for battery, and then hires a guy organizing a boycott of the city and the county that she serves? I've invited her on my show a couple times, but she has declined.
What?
We've invited her on this podcast as well, and she's declined.
Well, I like to know who she is. I know a little bit about her background and history, but I like to Alicia Reese will come on all the time. Yvette Simpson came on frequently. I'm respectful of every guest. I would ask her the questions and not berate and say, hey, just, you know, explain this to me. But I understand she will not give interviews.
So you did say something. So you were in here. You kindly came in for, I think, what was my favorite podcast last year, which was the New Year's resolutions. That was just an episode full of like touching ones, funny, like everybody was really themselves. And so you came in and we were having a conversation after that podcast in which you talked a little bit about what your future is, the near future, and you said some things that were actually stunning to me. It's one of the reasons why I wanted you to come on
today. What did I say that was
stunning? I think your contract is nearing.
Yeah, it's up a couple years. But I talked to Marty about this at the time, and he said to me, how long are you going to do it? And I said, well, my contract's up in a couple years. And
2 years, right?
Yeah, 2022. And I said, let's see how I feel at that point. And I told the station, I'll give you 6 months' notice then I think I'm going to wrap it up. And if they want to keep me, I'll talk to Penny and say, you know, she retired about a year ago. She spent 41 years in the system, 25 years as a judge. And we both have good health, thank God. And what do you want to do? And if she says it's time, I'll say okay. If she says, why don't you do 6 more months or a year, I'll say okay.
Which that was what Marty was like. He is kept in really good health and he wanted to spend time with his wife and travel. And he said there, as much as he loved his job, there was another part of his life.
Penny wants to travel. She wants to spend a couple months in the Amalfi Coast. She wants to get an RV, fly out to Denver, get an RV and go north. And I said, absolutely. And you can't do that if I'm doing this, and you just can't do both. And I at some point, you know, I think
that's going to be the radio station years. Has a big anniversary then, right?
Maybe Sherry and Jason. I mean, who knows? But on March 22nd, 1922, the station was turned on. And on March 22nd, 2022, it'll be 100 years, and I would have been there 40 years.
Wow.
And at some point, that's enough. But, you know, if Penny says 6 months or a year, I'll say okay.
Also, I feel like that's where the negotiation comes in. Like right when you started, right, there is a negotiation with somebody else and like that kind of negotiation
matters, right? What do you think? I got my sons here, my daughter-in-law, my two grandkids. I can't believe they're in high school. And I want to spend time doing what I want to. But right now, this is what I want to do. And Penny knows. I get up in the morning. I'm motivated to do it. I get ready to do it. When I get done, I don't listen to radio very much, believe it or not. I do it and I go, and then I get up the next morning and get ready and I do it. But as long as I'm enjoying doing it, and Penny says okay, I'll do it. It might be 2 or 3 more years. I don't know, but certainly at some point, I'm not working past 75. I'm 72 right now, so I said that's absolutely. I want to go. We have a nice place in Florida at a nice club, and my friends are there. And I play golf, and Penny's reforming the bylaws of the club, and she loves to read and all that stuff. We want to spend more time together.
Is she there right now? Naples, right?
No, she's up here. We go back and forth. She's here. Yeah. But she
when you're done, or will you go back and maybe even try to do
No. No, I've had my belly full of television. I did 650 live TV shows.
Gosh,
and what I went through for those 5 years, I have no idea how I did it. My typical day. I'm on the air at 3 p.m. on a Wednesday, 410 flight, Delta, LaGuardia. So I get in my car quickly, and I get to the airport, check, and I get there. And I get there about 5:30 p.m. Car picks me up, 6, get to Manhattan about 6:30 p.m. I have 3 briefing books waiting for me, about 20 pages thick, on the shows the next day. The topics, the reveals, the names of the parties, the reads, what I have to do, 3 of them. So I read all 3 of them, kind of memorize the names and what is. Then I get up at 6:30 in the morning the next morning, and I get in the studio at 7:30, make up to about 8:15. And then I would do 45 minutes of prep for the 9:15 show. And then I go up, warm up the audience, 150 people. And then I warm them up, and I do the show till about 10:30 or 11. Come off the set. Call Paul Mason, my producer. Here, what do I got today? You got this, you got that. I start about 11 o'clock to 1:30 or 2 o'clock. I do 3 hours of radio. And then about 1:30, they bring in the second show. The producers come in. There's 6 producers in the segments. I sit there. And the second TV show, the audience is loaded. I start at 2 o'clock. Get done about 3:30 with that show. And then at 4 o'clock, go back into makeup, change my clothes. 4:15, have a pre-meeting on the next show, what it's about. Go back on set at 4:30. Do that to like 5:30, quarter to 6. Come off set, take a quickie shower. And then at 6 o'clock, we had a post-mortem meeting on the 3 shows. What went right? What went wrong? Do this. Don't do that. This worked. That didn't work. Till about 7:30 p.m. And then I go back to my hotel, the Aventi, which was 30th and 6th. And I would have ordered dinner, come up about 8 o'clock, eat. And then by 9 o'clock, I had the 3 binders on the next day shows to do. So I'd work till like 11 o'clock at night, kind of memorizing each show the next day, get up the next morning, do exactly the same thing, and then take the 10 p.m. flight from LaGuardia back to CVG.
On Friday night.
Friday night. And sometimes it was delayed till Saturday morning at 6 a.m. So I did that for 5 years. In that period,
on
that period, I did 650 live television shows and about 1,500 3-hour radio shows.
Wow. You know, honestly, radio is really the template for what's going on now. People want to multitask. Radio has always been there for them to do that while people are driving, and podcasts, which of course we're doing right now. Everyone I know listens to podcasts because you can multitask. Right. People aren't saying, you know, in the daytime, like news from TV, they're talking about the things they can listen to while they're doing other things.
Right. And I did that. And I, for several years, I ran the radio station, which means I was the operations manager and the program director. And I did that from about 8 a.m. until noon. Then I did radio till 3. And then I did more management stuff till 4 or 5 or 6. And while that was going on, I took time off and tried criminal cases in the middle of that. And I did that for a few years. And so at some point, I got to slow it down a little bit. Right now, I'm in a golden spot. All I do is radio. I don't practice law, and I don't do television. And so I'm thinking, life's pretty good.
And you're in good health.
I'm in good health, to my knowledge.
You had your surgery, last year?
Aortic valve replacement, April 4th. I didn't know I had a heart valve. And everything else, I have no obstructions, my heart muscle, all that stuff. And Dr. Kariakis said this quarter-sized valve is malfunctioning, and your heart's made up for it. And now he says, I got the heart of a 38-year-old. I said, well, I don't think I have another 50 years, but I want to spend the next 10 to 12 years doing what I want to do. And right now, this is what I want to do.
We understand that. There's nothing else we would rather do.
Yeah.
All right. I know that you do have to go, but what was your most stunning moment on the radio? Like somebody said something that just drove the news cycle and you were just, you didn't see that coming.
Well, let me think now. Something recently would have been Mike DeWine recently came on and talked about the fact how he was going to win the election for governor, and off the air, all the polls had him losing by 5 to 10 percentage points. Then off the air, he told me why he was going to win, because he spent most of his life in every small town in Ohio, and everyone knows who he is. He said, I work this continually, and I thought that was one of those moments. An embarrassing moment I had, which I had to do it again, I wouldn't have done it, was Roxanne Qualls. At the moment, this was a mistake I made. At the moment she was elected mayor, Cincinnatians passed the so-called Human Rights Amendment.
That was 91?
It was a long time ago.
Or three.
And,
early
of course, 90s. The media was there for the interview because at the same time, Cincinnatians voted in a sense to have less full rights for lesbians and homosexuals and gay men. They also elected a woman who, at that point, was living by her choice, which was certainly her choice, an alternative lifestyle. And so with the media present, I asked her if she is gay. And I shouldn't have done it. It was the biggest mistake and blunder that I made. But the media was there, the Inquirer was there, too, to kind of film the reaction. Because at one point, the voters of Cincinnati said, we want homosexuals, LGBTQ, not to have full rights, while at the same time electing someone like that. And it was a big news story at the time, but man, I thought about it, and on a human level, I was unnecessarily cruel.
What did she say?
She said, I can't answer that question.
Did you ever talk to her after that?
No. One time she did. I did something really nice. It might have been the flood of 1997 or something. She awarded me the key to the city. And I looked at her. She looked at me. We shook hands. But that was a mistake. If I had to do that all over again. But the climate, Casey Smith and I and others worked hard to get that on the ballot. And there was a sense that what in the hell happened? Just happened. And I shouldn't have done that. That was a serious mistake that I made. And I would apologize to her. But so much time has passed, but that was one of those things that at the time I shouldn't have done it.
Well, there's so much transparency in when you're asking people things. You're live on the air. Jason and I, as we do the podcast, you know, we're learning. Like, people say things that surprise us, and you have to think.
Teleprompter.
That's how
it's important.
You're recording.
A teleprompter, but, I can. Okay, let's do that again.
But we're typically having a one-on-one conversation with people, and some things you understand are private when they're being discussed and go in stories or don't go in stories, and that's a balancing act that we've always had.
But in defense of me, the media called and said, are you going to ask her the question?
Do you ever have the media in now? I don't think, we don't really
rarely
come,
it doesn't
but
happen.
We do listen. We do listen, for
it
sure.
It doesn't happen now and then. Every now and then I'll have a newsmaker in, but, you know, like the McCain thing when I, you know, the media came up for that and those things. I think Rumsfeld and the Pentagon was a dramatic moment, and Bush called in 43, and so that was dramatic. But, you know, I look back, and there's a lot more positives than negatives. And, you know, it's I'm glad I did what I did, but someone else will have to pick up the baton in a few years. Maybe you too.
Well, you've been very supportive of me. I've been filling in some on WLW, and you've been very supportive, and I want to thank you for that. I also want to thank you for, you know, you bring me on as a guest fairly regularly. And
maybe today.
Oh, really?
I got a slot at 1 o'clock. I got Jesse Lee Peterson on at noon from Los Angeles, and I got the great number 85, Tim McGee, on at 2:05. What about 1:05 today if you got the guts?
I have the guts. Let's do it.
We all make mistakes, and we all do good and bad things. I'm a human being, and I'm sorry to Roxanne for that.
Well, Willie, thanks again. This is a great chat. Thanks for taking the time to come in, and really enjoyed it. Thanks, Willie.
We'll do it again, and God bless America.
Wow. That was an intense discussion with Willie.
A lot of
interesting
history.
Interesting stuff about Roxanne Qualls, and you could tell, like, he kept saying it over and over. Like, you could tell, like, he's given a lot of thought to that over the years about, you know, regretting that or feeling remorseful for it. I think we as journalists, and I think you made the point, like, we're doing this stuff in real time, and, you know, maybe that's a separate type of thing, but sometimes you kind of, I'll go back and I'll think, like, oh, I didn't need that. And I know this is a little in the weeds, but, like, I didn't need that sentence, or I didn't need to, you know, I should have, you know, used a different adjective to describe something, or, you know, I run things through my head like that quite often. When you write on deadline but obviously that's different than what he was talking about, but, yeah, no, I thought that was really, I never knew about that. I was actually in high school, I believe, when that all happened, and not in Cincinnati. So I don't.
I'm still stuck on the fact that the president just has a direct line to him and calls.
I know.
Imagine
wow.
getting that call. Hold for the president.
Yeah. Interesting. Hey, Don.
That's you know what? That's who he is, though.
Yeah.
Like, ingrained in this community and a trusted voice, you know, from Republicans, and that the president's calling him.
Yeah, it's funny, too, because I'm like thinking, as he's helped me, I'm like filling in, as you know, Sherry, but you've been on with me on WLW. I've been filling in some on the weekends. And one of the things that has been something I'm trying to work on that you have to do in radio is keeping your energy up. And when you're talking to callers and you're talking to guests, you got to keep your energy up. And I was like noticing that, like how he just brings it from an energy standpoint in that interview. And it just made me think of that. But like the fact that like he still has that much energy, and you can tell like he's still incredibly passionate about doing this after all these years and almost 40. What did you say? What is it?
Almost 40.
Almost 40 years. Yeah. So I enjoyed that interview.
Me too.
I thought it was one of our most interesting yet so far on the podcast. I appreciate all of our guests. I have to say that because I do, but I just thought that was an interesting one. Anyway, let's switch gears. Talk a little bit of this is the fun segment.
I haven't been that fun lately, but okay.
My, I don't know if we call this a so Cincinnati moment, Philly, but you know, this past Saturday, the weather was terrible. And
we were just looking for things to do because we were going stir crazy in our house. And Mike Reed, my 7-year-old, and I, usually once a year, I know it sounds kind of weird, but we usually take a trip to King Arthur's Court Toys in Oakley.
Oh, I remember
that. And I know
that.
It's like right there. It's not that far, but we just, it's like a treat. And that place is an absolute treat. So we decided, okay, we'll do it. And we brought the little guy along. And I had not been there since King Arthur's Court Toys redid their basement to basically make it into like this kid's, like, unbelievable play area. With like a little mini zip line and ropes course thing.
I'm not aware of this. I can't imagine. Wow.
Archery.
Oh, did you zip line? Oh, no.
No, but Roman, my 3-year-old, did. And it was hilarious. Took a video. But it was a blast. And they had couches, leather couches, like on the edges for like the parents to sit there. So like me and all the parents are just sitting there on our phones doing nothing while the kids are playing. And
but I, you know what? It's such.
It was cool.
It's such. That store in particular is part of the Cincinnati experience growing up. I'm glad you, like, that is a very Cincinnati thing. And I can remember doing that. But the experience in general of going to a toy store is.
A real toy store.
A real toy store. And just looking at all the options, it's going away with the age of Amazon. You know, I used to like to take Jack to Toys R Us and, like, he would just marvel at everything. And now things more come at him from advertisements that just come directly to a child because there's just not a place where you can look at everything all at one time and see what's out there.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's a sad, that's a sad part, I think, of the internet age.
It is. You know, and I thought of that. It hit me because I'm like, the kids get so, and we've talked about it on the podcast about how kids can get so enamored by the electronic devices, and we as parents can sometimes use it as the magic elixir. And to just get out and go see a real toy store where kids can experience the experience of a lot of these toys right there.
Right. And also have an experience. Like that's part of a new generation.
Absolutely.
Like you go to a store, but you actually have an experience.
Yes. So a proud moment happened while we were there. Of course, I can't go there. We can't just go there and look. You are walking out of there having bought something.
Well, we need to support our local business.
So I told the boys, either you get something that you can both use or you get nothing at all. Or you can get just one something from the little like $5 bin. And so Roman goes over and literally like without even any kind of hesitation grabs the wiffle ball bat and ball, like the old school yellow wiffle ball bat. He's 3 years old and he grabs it. And that's what he bought.
That's a classic toy. Every child has to have that.
Yeah. So anyway, I thought that was funny. I think he may have thought it was a sword or something.
Oh, who doesn't love a good sword? Those plastic swords, they break in like 2 seconds. You hit your brother with it and it's done. Yeah.
Yes. What else you got, Sherry?
I'm at the tail end of my cold, and I feel like that's so Cincinnati. Everyone I've talked to is the same. And the days that I've, like, kind of trudged into work, it's like you call sources, and they're like, I'm sick. I'm not at work today.
Yes.
Tail end.
Phil, you got anything? No? No winter camping this last weekend? That would have been real winter camping this past weekend as he shakes his head.
I know my best friend's
in agreement.
Hiking a big, long trail. And, you know, you have to do it every month. You have to do a part of it. And she did it this weekend.
Really?
It was a lot.
Sounds like fun. I'm getting antsy for the spring because I'm kind of excited, like, to get out and do some camping.
And kayaking. We've not been kayaking together. We have to do that.
Sherry, I bought that kayak last summer, and I haven't used it yet.
Oh, my God.
Do you guys want to do a podcast on the water?
Definitely.
All right, let's
podcast on the water. Dun, dun, dun. That's brutal. All right. I think we're done.
We accidentally tipping Phil. It's going to be a mess. All right, done. We're doing it.
Thanks to Bill Cunningham again. Be sure to check out those subscription options at sensei.com. Follow Sherry at Sharon Coolidge on Twitter. Follow me at Jay Williams Cincy with a Y on Twitter. And we will look forward to catching you next week. Thanks.